Did you hear what I just said? How many times have you said that in your life? How many times have you asked that this weekend? And I recognize that in this service it might be different because you don't have young children like I do. But how many times have you asked that question? Did you hear what I just said? How many times do you think Jesus wanted to ask that question? I mean, his disciples were truly terrible listeners. Jesus told them on three separate occasions that he was going to suffer and die because of his message that he was living. Three times. And one of those times happens directly before this story. I mean, it flows from one right into the other. So either James and John didn't listen ever, or they just couldn't hear him. It's no wonder that Jesus dubbed them the sons of thunder. They came in loud, stubborn, and bold. Thunder doesn't stop to listen. They came to Jesus and they said, "We want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. When you come into your glory, we want to sit right next to you." So last week I was at Bishop's Convocation and we heard Anna Carter Florence, who is a wonderful preacher and speaker. And she talked about coming at a text verbs first, which sounds silly, but it's not a practice we normally do. We usually come at it through its nouns. And so I want us to consider together today the verbs of James and John. Came, want, ask, sit. They show up immediately with Jesus and ask for what they want. And the only word they use that implies any action at all on their part is sitting. That's right. They are willing to sit next to Jesus in his glory after his hard work is over. I mean, it's a real sacrifice, but somebody has to sit there, right? But before we aim all our righteous indignation at James and John, let's consider those other 10 angry men. The other disciples aren't off the hook. Why are they so mad? Well, just one chapter prior to this in Mark, all 12 had been walking together and arguing amongst themselves, who is the greatest? So my guess is the other 10 are either angry because they're embarrassed that James and John snitched about something that was supposed to just stay between the disciples, or more likely, I think they're just jealous. They didn't get to Jesus first to ask for this elevation in rank. But let's be honest for a minute, friends. If I'm one of the 12, the disciples that are following Jesus, and we are constantly getting it wrong as we do, I think that I might be scared too that I'm not special enough. I might be worried that there isn't enough love or enough grace or enough greatness to go around for all 12 of us. Maybe I'm worried that I'm not going to make the cut in the end. Because this is how we think, right? As soon as we get into groups or tribes or teams or communities, we start ranking and ordering. I confess that I've wanted things before that would be beneficial only to me. I've been angry even with others for asking for the thing that I secretly wanted. I've been afraid that they would get it and that I wouldn't. I too have talked to leaders in hopes that I might prove myself to be worthy of their vision that they are casting, just in case I slip off their radar, or worse, I was never on it in the first place. This is human nature, is it not? But it's called scarcity thinking. It's not abundant thinking at all. And I have struggled with this. Have you? We come, we ask, we want. Those are verbs we are very familiar with. Now, to be fair, asking and wanting are not bad in and of themselves. When we think of those who constantly ask and constantly want, who do we associate this with? I'm actually asking. Children, toddlers, or at least in my house, that's kind of the story these days. Constantly asking, constantly wanting. But Jesus, throughout the text, we've been hearing it for weeks now, literally lifted up and held children as an example of the kingdom and faithfulness. So it's not the wanting and the asking that are the problem. They only become a problem when we desire the wrong thing, or if the wanting is as far as we ever get, when the only action that we're willing to take toward that desired goal is to sit and soak up the glory. Because as the disciples came and asked and wanted, what were Jesus' verbs? Well, besides a lot of speaking, which he does a lot, and one other verb, which we'll come back to, Jesus' verbs follow a very similar pattern as the disciples. They're attributed to him as the Son of Man, but they go in a very different direction. The disciples came, they want, they ask. Meanwhile, it says, Jesus came, served, and gave. See the difference, right? Disciples were ultimately worried about themselves. Jesus was ultimately worried about anyone but. His verbs all imply action that is selfless and self-emptying. And the line at the very end of our text, if you want to look back at it, is better translated maybe that he gave himself or his inmost being or that which has life in order to release people, to release them from themselves. In other words, he gave his whole personhood, every ounce of his life, all of his mission, everything that he did to make life better for those in the world that he loved so that they could turn around and do the same thing. Everything Jesus did was toward his ultimate goal of creating the kingdom of heaven on earth for all of God's creation. I dare say there was very little sitting involved for Jesus, except maybe to rest, reconnect with God, and prepare for the next task of serving and giving. When Jesus asked James and John if they truly know what they're asking of him, the way that the verb tense reads in this is sort of this ongoing but current action. Are you at this moment, right now, capable of drinking the cup that I am actively drinking as we're walking along? Are you right now doing what I am willing to do? Of course, the answer is no, even though they say, yes, we are able, Jesus. Because right now, at that very moment, they were asking a self-serving question that didn't involve any hard work or any giving away of themselves. Jesus stops them right there and says, their very question betrays their goal. But I want to notice something important. Jesus doesn't chastise them at all. In fact, the only anger in this text is attributed to those other 10 disciples. Jesus simply tells them, they're not there yet. They're not ready. They're not capable. They aren't in the headspace required to follow him all the way to the end because their priorities are off. He says, you want to be like me and you want to go where I'm going? You aren't ready yet. You aren't ready to live that out. But someday, he says, someday you will be. Because the one other verb that Jesus gets in this text that I've always missed out on until I zeroed in on these words is call. He called the disciples over to talk to them about greatness. It sounds so casual and unimportant. Jesus called his disciples over for this conversation, but this word called in the Greek is the same word that's used in their original call stories. Jesus uses it over and over and over in the gospel, in fact. Because ultimately, this is yet another call story. Because those disciples, those first 12, and even ourselves, have never finished following and growing. Disciples are always in the process of becoming disciples. It's an ongoing journey, a continuous challenge to turn away from self and toward the life work of Jesus. And like those original disciples, Jesus reminds us over and over again that there are natural consequences of doing that. And he asks us every day, are you ready? Are you ready to drink the cup that I drank? Are you prepared to be potentially hated, left out, laughed at, called foolish for serving and giving yourself away? And Jesus knows us well enough to know that some days our answer is no. So he persists in calling reminding us that greatness is experienced only when we wield our privilege, not for ourselves, but to give life to the other. So sadly, maybe today, maybe we confess that we aren't that different than James or John. We love the idea of sitting in God's eternal love without acting out any of the hard stuff that allows others to do that too. Maybe we aren't so good at listening to or for Jesus either. At least I'm not. We hear throughout Scripture what the kingdom of heaven is all about, what God desires for us as we live together in community, and yet we're inclined to look out for ourselves first. It's hard to fight against that inclination. That's why we gather together to find strength. But Jesus didn't give up on James and John. He continued to walk with them and to teach them and to call them, and they did, in fact, go on to better understand his mission, and they did follow almost exactly in his footsteps. Jesus does not give up on you either, disciples. We never slip off his radar. He never runs out of grace for any of us. We continue to be called as disciples to come, to serve, to give for the sake of the world. Thanks be to God.